My first guest today, a stranger to nobody here in the Des Moines Metro, former Mayor Frank County, also the longest serving mayor in the history of the city, and also a longtime climate activist. Frank, welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
And you've also been to many of the previous COPs, the UN Climate Summits. You've been to what, three or four of them, five of them?
Yeah, quite a few.
Quite a few, lost count.
Yeah.
I want to look back at those COP summits, but first let's look at the one that just concluded in Brazil. Some are saying very, very disappointing. What's your take on the outcome of this year's COP?
I think it's always good when people from around the world get together and register their concerns, which is what this is all about in terms of climate. And unfortunately, at this one, despite the immense advocacy for multi-level action, it didn't come out. It sort of missed its opportunity to, shall we say, institutionalize finance and support for multi-levels of government to work together to actually begin achieving some things. I mean, there's always goals and things that people talk about that should be done, but I think a lot of people were disappointed. And of course, unfortunately, it was local government and a few state-level representatives representing the United States, because the federal government, for whatever reason, did not come.
For whatever reason? Well, because maybe the president is a climate denier. I quoted Cristina Figueres last week, and maybe you know her. Very instrumental person in the previous round of COPs. And she said, Ciao Bambino, she said, regarding Trump's refusal to attend the summits. Basically, bye, baby. If you don't want to come, you don't want to come. And then she and others saying that, hey, maybe this is going to go a lot better without the U.S. here. We really don't need the U.S. to move forward on climate action. I don't know if that's true or not, because it doesn't look like COP moved the conversation forward very, very ambitiously.
Well, I agree. I think that there were some major presentations, including a lot of the natives from South America who came and talked about the necessity to acknowledge what's going on globally and talk about the rainforests and with the destruction that's occurring for development, and also because of the huge change in climate with heat and other things, that it is destroying huge portions of the rainforest.
And the Amazon is one of the key tipping points. And if it moves from being a rainforest to a savanna, which is kind of looking like the direction it's heading right now, and you couple that with other tipping points like melting Arctic ice, rising sea temperatures, the death of the coral reefs, and you've got a major catastrophe rolling forward at an ever-increasing speed. And, it just seems like more and more people around the world get this. It's embarrassing that we have a president who is in denial of it. But it looks to me, from what my take on COP, Frank, was that, again, Saudi Arabia and Russia played a key role. I mean, two big petrostates played a key role in making sure that nothing significant happened.
True. And, they have worked to that end for a number of these COPs, including some of the ones that, as you pointed out, that I've attended. However, it always is uplifting to see so many people in so many different areas. I mean, the organization that I represented, which was ICLEI.
What does that stand for?
Originally known as the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. Now they're Cities for Sustainability. But we've got over 2,500 members to that organization from around the world. And there are concerns that are coming from all these members, and trying to all of us come together to raise our voices, to have those other higher levels of government acknowledge A, what's going on, and B, to acknowledge also that it's the local governments that have to respond to these disasters. Mm. They happen someplace, whether it's Des Moines, Iowa, or whether it's New Orleans, or whether it's other places around the world, including Jamaica and whatever, because of some of these climate significant events that have happened. And it's, we need to have the acknowledgement that we're the ones that are, A, need to prepare for it, need to respond to the businesses, to the people, to protect them, not only today, but for generations in the future.
And we need to take responsibility for the reality that we have caused a lion's share of the global warming that is impacting people around the world.
True.
Yeah, and that's a hard pill to swallow.
Well, you know, I think it is that education and the science that has discovered the problem. And one of the things that is not being recognized in Washington at the moment is the science.
Right.
Whether it's, quite frankly, climate, or whether it's medical, or whether it's so many other things. Science is out there to tell us what's going on. If you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And when you take down all the measurements, it's really tough to feel what's going on in the moment or be able to project it in terms of direction. And there's moments when I feel like there are those that are trying to do that on purpose.
Yeah, well, and trying to do it on purpose, so fossil fuel companies and petrostates reliant on them can continue to get rich that way. And I think one point that Cristina Figueres made that I thought was pretty astute was that, you know, these dinosaurs, if I can call them that, people who are living in the past in terms of policy, in terms of energy, are going to be left behind because more than anywhere in the world right now, China is kicking butt when it comes to renewable energy, in terms of manufacturing solar panels and other forms of renewable production. And, you know, the developing world is eating that stuff up. And we're going to be left behind as China becomes the dominant force in terms of the new age of energy. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, I think that there's a lot of places, and we've seen it even here in Iowa with, you know, the windmills that are going up, and a lot of those, you know, were manufactured, quite frankly, with the blades and everything right here in Iowa.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's some resistance to that at this moment from certain sectors, and, you know, we need to do more of that and to look at wind and solar and hydro and all those things that are, quite frankly, we'll call it non-polluting, you know, to our environments, and to turn our backs on those and try to play them down and switch back to coal and gas and oil is really, to me, a huge mistake.
Yeah.
In keeping us going, as you pointed out earlier, in the wrong direction to continue to, we'll just say, warm the planet.
And one thing I learned from my recent 220-mile Save America March, it took me through, nine different counties. One of them was Adair County, the county seat of Greenfield. And I walked by so many wind turbines and learned from one of my hosts that there were somewhere over 450 wind turbines in Adair County.
Ooh.
And, you know, a lot of the concern, I mean, there are legitimate concerns about shadow flicker, about the impact on migrating birds, on the environment, the landscape itself. One concern being the red lights that flash all the time at night. You know, little concerns like that, but they're big problems if you're the one living next to them. But I was really glad to know that a lot of these problems were being addressed. There's an approach now to dealing with the red lights that instead of having them flash all the time, have them be motion detected. Hmm. Go off only when there's a plane or something anywhere in the vicinity. You know, and again, a lot of farmers, landowners, are making money on these turbines. They're getting, $8,000 to $10,000 a year per turbine, which is a heck of a lot better than a one-time payment you get from an oil company that runs a pipeline through your land. So, you know, I mean, and it looks like a lot of the opposition to the installation of these wind turbines has kind of subsided. And so, you know, I think, like you said, it's an up-and-coming technology that has a lot more promise than coal, oil, or natural gas.
And absolutely. And back to, you know, watching this happen during my time in office, and my first COP actually was Copenhagen.
Copenhagen,
yeah. But we went there, and I got to tell you, the expectations were so high for really positive outcomes. And, you know, as you walk down the streets in Copenhagen, there were demonstrations. They weren't against what we were doing. They were all in support.
Yeah.
There were youth out there. There were farmers out there. There were all kinds of stuff talking about raising things more environmentally friendly. We should eat foods that are more healthy and would help the health and well-being of citizens all around the world. And I mean, there were literally a couple of days over 200,000 people out. We'll say protesting in support what was going on.
And I think we saw that in Paris as well in 2015. That's the one COP that I came close to attending, let me say.
I remember you were there. But the thing was that happened in Copenhagen, while there was all the talk and everything that was happening, and the United States showed up and participated, but nothing came out of it. And I remember in 2012, we were having a meeting of our local government group, and we were in Seoul, Korea, and talking about the upcoming circumstances with the UN and what we should be doing as local governments. And it was interesting to me to listen as you're sitting in a room with the mayor of Seoul and the mayor of Paris and the mayor of London and the mayor of Rio de Janeiro and the mayor of Copenhagen and people who really had participated in a lot of things environmentally and had pushed it. And they were talking about the Kyoto Protocol running out at the end of 2012. And it was interesting that they were talking about, well, let's get together and we're going to have a local government voice in this when the group puts together the plan for the new protocol. And, you know, unless anybody has anything else, we're going to go on and we're going to send that out to you and we want your input. And I said, I put my hand up and I said, wait a minute. I said, when is it that this is going to happen? He said, well, we think the next chance is going to be in Paris. And so we'll, you know, get that out to you and we'll get the input back. And I said, when do you think this draft will come out? They said, well, probably, you know, Paris is going to be in November of 15. And so it'll probably come out first or second quarter of 15. And I got to tell you, here was Des Moines, Iowa, standing up with all these cities. And I stood up and I said, you've got to be kidding me. I said, we're going to wait to the first or second quarter of 2015 on something that's going to be introduced in 15. I said, we saw what happened in Copenhagen. Local government has to speak out. And I'll bet you there's a few people in this room that know heads of state. And I'm looking at the mayor of Paris. I know he does. And the mayor of London. I know he does, and I know the mayor of Copenhagen does, and Rio does too. We need to start today.
And did they?
And I sat down, and it was dead silence. And but the mayor of Helsinki put his hand up, and they called on him, and he said, I'm with him. And pretty soon the whole room was, and we started.
That's great.
The mayors to do it, and actually we had our own COP in Paris at City Hall, and we were getting better media coverage than the COP was out at the airport. And but I think we had over 400 mayors that showed up and signed on to our own deal. And I think that that in part was what caused the outcome to create the Paris Climate Agreement.
And probably the most positive outcome to date, including what just came out of Brazil. But, I mean, is there a future in these COPs actually getting to the root of the problem and coming up with a firm commitment to moving beyond fossil fuels? I mean, the next one is, again, a year away, but and we have to keep going, obviously. But I think recently you floated an idea that maybe it's time to kind of decentralize the whole COP process and localize these conversations and localize the commitments. Now, tell me a little bit more about that, Frank.
Well, the idea is to put together what we call a local COP.
Mm-hmm.
And so you bring our community together, which we did a little bit when we talked about putting our sustainability office in the city, and we went around and, you know, did our DSM plan. And it's those kinds of events where you bring the whole community together. You talk about the science, you talk about how we're all in this together and what we all can do. And hopefully not only people like us that, you know, have been here a while, but future generations, you get them involved. Everybody from high school students, that there's a number of high schools that have their own environmental committees and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah.
You bring everybody together to understand what we're doing. Look at the risks that are in your community. And look at the opportunities that we have to, A, switch to, let's say, less carbon-based future, and to look at the opportunities on also preparing for those extreme events that happen and what it is that we can do, and try to sort out where the finance is going to come from to make some of these things happen.
And do you think there's willpower in the leadership of Des Moines, for example, to take that seriously and move forward with it?
Well, I'm hopeful, and I think that there's members of the leadership that are committed to that kind of positive outcomes, and let's hopeful that we can get the rest of it to do it. But I think if we have a total community voice, you know, not just you and I out there, you know, beating the drum, but that we can get the whole orchestra to come together and convince the corporate side as well that we're all in this together. Let's work together. Let's plan together. Let's think together. Let's figure out how we're going to finance together and really demonstrate how positive local voices can make positive things happen.
So one more question. Again, this program is broadcast all, you know, in different parts of the country, but just take Iowa, a mid-sized state with a population of about 3 million. How many local COPs would you envision being ideal as units that could really move forward on this conversation in a state this size?
Well, you know, you have to look at it where it could happen, but the local COPs, I think, certainly Des Moines ought to do one. I think all the urban areas in this state should do them, of which, what, there are 8 or 10.
Depending how you define urban, yes.
Yeah, but I would think, you know, Cedar Rapids, Iowa City, Dubuque, Davenport, Waterloo, Sioux City. There's been a lot of interest in the past in even Fort Dodge and places like that to do certain things. Mm-hmm. But show sort of a plan and share it to any and all communities that want to try to put these sorts of things together.
Right.
Because so many communities are at risk for some of the unfortunate things that are happening, whether it's strictly with the global warming and the heat and those cycles, but also
flooding,
water,
drought, yeah. Yeah.
You know, as you know, we've got huge water problems, and I think we have to promote.
Yeah. Well, Frank,
gathering the science,
yeah,
and gathering the information, and let's share it, and hopefully.
Well, Frank, I really, really appreciate you joining us. I think we're going to have you back in 2026 to see assess how much progress has been made toward the next generation of COPs, either the international one we've all become familiar with, or the local ones that we think might have some real promise. Folks, Frank County's been my guest. Frank, thank you so much for joining us.
You bet. It's great to be here, and keep up the broadcast.